accession number 20058, reel 1.
Major Frank Broderick, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in this city, Lancaster.
Which year was this?
The year was 1920.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family background, what your father did for a living and so on, please?
My father was a schoolmaster. When I was born, he was teaching in Durham. And when I was born, of course, it was in Lancaster, at the home of my mother's parents.
Where did you go to school?
Initially, my father then was at Abbeystead, which is about 10 miles from here. Abbeystead is a valley. When I was born, it belonged to Lord Sefton, the Earl of Sefton. He died when I was quite small, and he had no one to follow him. And it was bought by the Duke of Westminster, so he has it now.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
19.
So that was in
39? 39, yeah.
What did you do on leaving school?
Sorry?
What did you do on leaving school?
I went to Leeds with the intention of teaching in school. And to take the necessary qualifications for teaching.
So was this just on the outbreak of war?
Yeah.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
I did, yes, I did.
How did you feel about it?
It's difficult. I thought that there would be a war, and I, at that time, felt that I'd like to be in the services. My father said, "No, you don't, and you stay in Leeds, they stay there for the full year, and then, having done that, consider the rest."
Why did your father take that position, do you think?
He did it because he was at the same sort of age group in the First World War, and he, as soon as he'd had the chance, he joined the forces. That was at the very beginning of war, and it meant that he was living then in Durham, or just outside Durham, and he joined up into the Durham Light Infantry. I'd been at school in the OTC, what the school calls officer training, OTC, officer training corps. And I was at Leeds when I had my calling up papers. It was after my 20th birthday then, or on my 20th birthday. And I was surprised in the sense that I had to have an interview first, and the interviewer was a man that I knew, a colonel.
He was an ex King's Own.
So I took it for granted that I would be called up into the King's Own. King's Own Royal Regiment. The local, well, still is amalgamated with the Border Regiment now. But in fact, I had my calling up papers to go to Carlisle into the Border Regiment. Not that it bothered me at all, but I just expected to be in the King's Own.
Then what happened?
Well, I was called up to Carlisle and put in a recruit platoon, and in fact had a very good sergeant. He really was good. He didn't like me all that much, for the simple, I'll tell you why, the simple reason that he had the whole of our platoon on the walls of the castle in Carlisle, and he was teaching various things, and one of them was the fire order when you the private soldier is told what to do, and he was teaching us the sequence of orders, telling you where to fire, and unfortunately he made a mistake. Well, I knew it with having done it at school. I knew it better than he did, and I corrected him, which is something that I ought to have had more sense about, put it like that.
What were the consequences for you for doing that?
Oh, he didn't do anything to me, but he made it fairly obvious that he was above being told to follow the orders that fire things given.
So you weren't persecuted because of this?
No, not at all. No, I'll say that for him. He was a good soldier, a good sergeant. And I liked him.
What else do you remember from this time?
Well, I had this certificate A. I don't know, are you familiar with them?
Yes.
I had one of those, but it didn't have any significance then. But one or two other things did make life very easy for me. Two of the lads who'd been in Leeds with me were older than me, and they'd taken a course in physical training, and they'd been called up actually to Carlisle, and so they were running the PE and the rugby and the cricket and things like that. Well, that made life quite a lot easier for me. So I played in the cricket team, because again at school we had one of the Lancashire County players to act as a coach, and he'd also been called up to Carlisle. He ran the cricket team, and by tradition the colonel is a captain of a cricket team. Well, I was put in the cricket team, so you can imagine it didn't make me too popular, but it gave me a lot of advantages in life. So that at the end of the initial 8 weeks, I was recommended for officer training and sent up to Dunbar.
What happened there?
Well, it was then, I think, a 3 month course, and the end of which you either were a second lieutenant or you were RTU'd, returned to units.
Were you impressed with the course?
Sorry?
Were you impressed with the course?
I'm sorry, I don't just...
The course at Dunbar?
Yes.
Were you impressed with it?
Yes, yes, I was. They were almost all either Black Watch or one of the other Scottish regiments. But they also had some... and I've forgotten the regiment now. The Territorial Regiment in London, who used to fire the gun to mark the rulers' birthdays.
Royal Horse Artillery.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, you know more than that.
Or maybe Honourable Artillery Company.
Honourable Artillery Company, that's better. They were mostly very young ones from that regiment. So at the end of my 3 months, I came back to Carlisle, which surprised me a bit, because I thought they might want people who'd been, as it were, a private soldier there. They wouldn't want it otherwise, but it didn't make any difference at all. In fact, it helped, because one of the things that brand new second lieutenants were called upon to do was to take drill on the parade ground inside the castle. And it's very difficult to someone who's not so used to it. And again, I was fortunate. The chap who'd been the company sergeant major when I was there as a private soldier, was a friend of mine, should we say. He'd always treated me very decently, and continued to do. And he used to tell me the orders out of the corner of his mouth, which again made life very much easier. And in fact, in two years later, that same man I was in the 9th Battalion, the Border Regiment. He was posted to us as the Regimental Sergeant Major. And so I was happy to see him because I'd always counted him as a friend. In Carlisle, there were six of us, second lieutenants, all came to Carlisle at the same time, and we were all given a choice of what part of the unit we would prefer to take. You could have, I can't remember them all, I don't think, you could be the signal platoon, the intelligence platoon, the mortar platoon, and simply an ordinary foot soldier, which was my aim in life. I was quite happy to be that. And of course, naturally, none of us, I don't think any of us got the one we wanted. I finished up as a signaller, and the other ones were sent to other places. So that, having been in Carlisle for, I think it was a month, I was sent off to the Cumbrian coast, to Workington. And Workington, they were forming the 9th Battalion. So I was put in that unit as a signal officer, which I didn't know anything at all, of course. However, when I'd been in about a couple of months, we were moved across to Northumberland on coastal defence, and my signal platoon were all being trained by a couple of very good NCOs who were signalers, and I was sent off to
the Armistead Signal School.
Yes. And there was 10 of us on the course, and I think it was an 8-week course, at the end of which we were packed off back to our units and continued with the training of our platoons, which was what I did. And which, in fact, I quite enjoyed. And very soon we were told that we were going overseas, and it was fairly obvious where we were going because we were issued with some tropical kit, and in fact we were packed on board a ship, the Orcades, in Glasgow, and we sailed out from there.
What was the voyage like?
It was very good. It was long. We first of all sailed nearly to America. It was in the westerly direction, and south, and then back east, and we had with the the ships that were in the convoys, protection for the convoys, several destroyers, but we also had two capital ships. I've forgotten the name.
Doesn't make any difference, it'll be on record anyway.
They, when we got opposite Gibraltar, the Mediterranean, they shot off into the Mediterranean. We went on down as far as Sierra Leone, Freetown. We were there about a week, and then further south again and round the base of South Africa to
Durban,
and we stayed there about a fortnight, not doing any training, but we'd just taken off the ship, and we had to wait until a suitable ship came along. The other thing I could say about the ship was that its name was Orcades. Now, by sheer chance, when I was at school here, I went on a trip to the United States and to Canada, and the Orcades was the ship that took us to New York. And it was a big ship. I think it was about 22,000 tons, so it was a comfortable ship to travel on. And again, we were lucky in that it was the Commodore's ship, and the Commodore was short of signallers, so we provided the signallers for him, and our people told us what was happening to us from from the having read the various signals between the ships. And we've actually got to Bombay, and from there straight across by train to Calcutta. Not what we'd expected. We'd expected to go into Burma and be soldiers, as it were, but we were sent, we're put in the Fort William there, which is an old-fashioned Clive fortress with a Maidan, sort of lawns all around it.
What had been your impression of India when you arrived?
The things that we were greeted on setting off from Bombay were the sort of poverty, the people begging on the side of the track, and children, lots and lots of children, and banging their tummies, saying things like "no mama, no papa" sort of thing, which wasn't what we'd expected as India. But anyway, I think it took 2 days to get across to Calcutta and into the fort, which had everything really. It was old-fashioned, but it had a swimming pool, cricket ground, football ground, just about everything. And we had about 9 months there, and enjoyed it, because we, had so many choices in games.
What kind of duties were you carrying out?
We, they were very mixed. They were just plain ordinary guard duties. They, Calcutta being the chief city in that part of the world, there was a lot of trains, a lot of railway lines branching out from there, and we had to provide usually armed escorts for them to ride on the train and go up to Delhi or various places like that. We also, it was also used to send people out to have a month's training with an Indian unit.
Which Indian unit did you train
with? I had a month with a unit from Madras. Madrases are a small, dark-skinned men. But again, it was an enjoyable month because they treated us as if we were tin gods, very nearly. And I'm not meaning me, and the troops, the lads in general. And so I enjoyed that.
Was this in Madras?
No. It was a unit that was in itself doing guard duties on an Indian Air Force station.
Did you learn much from being with them?
I enjoyed it. They had a colonel and a second in command were both old British soldiers, old elderly men. And they had one of their own regimental sergeant majors. And I was given sort of a free hand to join in any movements, any training, any guard duties that they were doing.
What was the quality of these Madras troops?
The training wasn't very good, but the men themselves were very kind, very what should we say? They treated white people extremely, rather as little gods almost, in a sense. You were treated very well indeed.
What was wrong with the training?
Well, it was very different from what I'd been used to with our own people. It was very simple, and there was difficult to think. Well, I can't just...
You mean undemanding? Undemanding?
Completely undemanding, yes. Of course, they didn't speak English. I was at a disadvantage, but the training...